episode of the Radix Copycast. I'm Emily, I'm Radix's research and marketing executive, and today I'm joined by Fiona, who's our MD and lead copywriter here at Radix.
Hello.
This episode we're going to be discussing the humble B2B case study, how they're normally presented and how they could be so much more as a piece of content. Plus, we'll be providing some quick tips for people who are interviewing clients and industry figures in order to create content like case studies and ebooks. So, case studies. Now, as we've already suggested, that as a format of content, they're currently not making the most of the potential for that format. And just exactly what are they doing wrong, or what are people doing wrong with case studies at the moment?
Yeah, I think from some of the clients that we work with, being sort of large global technology companies, there's been a move to kind of standardise the case study format as a kind of quality control thing, so that the organisation will have set a template for how the case study should be laid out. And then this edict goes out to all of the marketing teams around the world, just in order to ensure there's a quality standard across all of the case studies. But what's tended to happen is that they've kind of been boiled down into this very dry, dull format where, you know, you get an introductory paragraph saying that what the company does. Then you get a few bullet points as to what business problem they had. You get a few bullet points as to the technology that was implemented as a solution. And you get a few bullet points as to the kind of overall results that this implementation produced. And then you get a quote from the customer. And that's it. And it's just boring. You know, I don't think anybody really likes reading a list of bullet points. It's not really telling an engaging story, which is something else we've discussed before. And it's not really bringing the whole story to life and sort of giving voice to the people who were involved in the decision and why they made the decision and how they came to it. So I just think they're dull. And I think companies could do a lot more to with their case studies to make them more engaging and to make them much better ambassadors for themselves and for their products.
Okay. I suppose, I mean, how ingrained is the current format? I mean, how far back are we talking the kind of acceptance that introduction paragraph, bullet point, couple of quotes, maybe more than just a tiny bit of space devoted to the final product? How, because you've been in content creation for a while and copyright, how long has this format existed?
Quite a while, so I would say at least all of the time that I've been working in technology, PR and marketing, which more years than I care to remember, probably about 15. So, I mean, there are companies that are taking innovative approaches to case studies. It's not that this is how everybody does it,
yeah,
and this is how everybody does it all the time, but it just seems to be that if you're a business and you want to produce, there seems to be a focus on producing a high volume of case studies, and if you want to produce a high volume of case studies, you've got a limited budget for it, therefore you're going to try and stick to this kind of boring, turgid, two-page PDF format just in order to get the number of case studies that you might want.
So, Fiona, how would you suggest that people go about making case studies a better piece of content that's really going to do them justice when they're, because obviously the point of a case study is to try and source new clients. So what can they do to improve matters?
Well, I would certainly ditch the bullet points. So the aim is to encourage people to actually read them. So I would spend a lot more time just on the style and the content and how they're presented, just to make it the most engaging story possible. And there's various ways you can do that. So one of the main ones is to put the person who you're interviewing at the heart of the story. So make it a human story rather than a boring business problem, here's a technology solution story. So that, I mean, I think we're going to come on to talk about interviewing, but that involves, you know, asking the right questions and getting the right information out of the person you're interviewing to find out just the human angle of the story. You know, what personal problems did they have in their daily life that this great technology has solved? You know, what's it done for them personally within the organisation? And letting the person you're interviewing, letting their actual voice come out and making sure you capture things in their own words to make them sound like a human being. There is a tendency to massage people's quotes to make them sound more corporate. And there's even a tendency to make up quotes for people and ask them to approve them afterwards. So you're just putting words in their mouth.
Which is also a long and odious process, because not only do you have to get approval for those quotes, but the entire case study at the end of the day in order for it to be made public.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a balance that you have to strike between telling this personal story and producing a piece of content that your client is going to sign off, but more importantly that the customer is going to sign off as well. So there's an awful lot of challenges in producing a nice engaging case study. I'm not saying it's an easy process.
Would you say one of the issues currently with case study production is that the whole process could start off with the conversation taking place with the wrong person at the customer organisation? Would you say that it's not always the best person that you get to interview when producing a case study?
That definitely happens a lot, yes. So that's the risk, and especially in B2B, where the buying decision is going to have been made by several people. Mm. So it's going to have been made probably by somebody from IT, probably by somebody from finance, probably by somebody from procurement, and probably by one or more people from the actual operational side of the business. And when you're writing the case study, you generally only get to talk to one of those people. And that person that you get to talk to may not have been privy to all of the conversations around, you know, do we buy this technology or do we not buy this technology? They may not be privy to all of the business problems that the product or the piece of technology was designed to solve. So if you're only talking to one person, you're probably only getting part of the story, and you may not be talking to the person who's got the best insight into the whole thing.
I'm assuming that part of the issue with interviewing people for a case study is partly due to the fact that you've got to consider the audience of who's reading it. So who would they listen to most? And is there perhaps a slight issue with people not maybe listening to the direct user might not be of a senior enough level for somebody to take the case study seriously? Is that a problem?
No, that's exactly right. You may be selling, for example, a piece of HR software, so maybe a talent management application, for example, and you may end up for that interviewing somebody from IT who may not necessarily have the insight into all of what was going on within the HR department that led them to this need for this piece of software. And if you're only portraying it from the IT perspective, but you want heads of HR to read the case study, then there's a kind of mismatch there, and they may not relate to what the IT person in the case study is saying. So I think probably a better way of doing a case study is not just to talk to one person, but to identify a number of people within the customer organisation, interview all of them, and from that piece together this entire story that will speak to all of the different people that you want to target with the case study.
I mean, considering the dry format of a lot of case studies at the moment, are we perhaps aiming towards something that reads as a more journalistic piece of the journey to going from problem to discovering solution to implementing solution? Or
yeah, I think case studies could definitely benefit from a more journalistic approach being taken to them. In fact, even to the extent of commissioning journalists to write the case studies for you. So certainly some of the best, as you might call it, customer stories I've seen have been like articles in something like Wired magazine or in Fast Company magazine, where they're presented in a really kind of engaging and dynamic way and putting the person at the centre, and, you know, here's the person, here's the problems they were facing in the workplace, and here's how they got around them, and oh, by the way, this piece of technology may have helped. But it's a kind of person, a person story, it's a human story. It's like, here's how this person overcame this problem, making them the hero, which is again something that we've talked about before as well. And I think journalists or people who've had journalistic training are much better placed to bring out that human angle than perhaps some marketing people or even some copywriters. Obviously not us.
Okay, so how do we persuade the client in investing more time and money in a case study to bring in a greater sense of story format and so move it away from introduction, bullet points, quotes, solution?
Yes, I mean, I don't think it's an either-or decision. Mm. So I think that you might see it as there are bread-and-butter case studies, which is where you know you've got somebody who's willing at the customer organisation to give a quote, but you don't really know much more than that. So you can do a quick interview with them, get a quote, and put together one of these bread-and-butter case studies. That's fine. But there are no doubt out there kind of superstar case studies, where there are many people in the organisation who are willing to talk about the project and are willing to devote time and effort into creating something, creating a story around what they've done. So first of all, it's identifying those case studies, and that means working very closely with sales, I think, to understand who's out there and where these superstar stories are, and how we can get into those customers. And then it's probably a case of proving that putting more effort in has some value back. So it's looking for evidence that a more story-focused case study can actually bring in new business. So, for example, we worked recently on a video case study which took a lot of time and effort on our client's part, on the part of the end customer, on the video company that was working on it. And from that case study, we had multiple people from the organisation talking. In fact, it was fairly scripted, but doesn't need to be scripted. This one was. But you did see the decision to buy this new technology from all of these angles within the organisation. So we had a C-level executive, we had an HR person, we had a team leader, line manager, and we had an employee all talking about how this software had changed their lives, their working lives. And a lot of time and effort went into creating this video, but it actually paid off in terms of it led to a 1 million plus deal for our client. So it paid for itself many, many times over. So once you've got evidence like that, it's quite easy to persuade client to invest more time and money and effort into those superstar stories that are going to deliver a return like that.
Okay, moving away from video now, would you say there are actually benefits for copywriters in the process and creation of case studies?
I think case studies are really a really, really important thing for marketing copywriters to do. Because the more of your clients' customers you talk to, the more insight you get into how the technologies and products are actually used and what actually goes on day to day in the customers' organisations and what kind of problems they run up against and how they perceive the technologies, the products that your client provides. Because it may not be in any way like what your clients want you to portray.
They do have this habit of evangelizing on to the point of surely there's you can't be that pro your product. It's a bit unfair. I mean, yes, it's your product, but making out that it's the best thing in the world since sliced bread is
absolutely
problematic at times.
Absolutely, yeah. And by talking to customers, you understand the kind of real situations that these products are put into and how they actually perform and how they're actually seen. And it just gives you some really good information as to what the customers see as the good points about them and what the customers see as the bad points about them. And that can feed back into, well, first of all, you can give feedback to the client that should be valuable to them. But that can really feed into everything that you're writing for the client, because you understand how this stuff is used in the real world, the context in which it's used, which you wouldn't get otherwise. So I think case studies are really important in that way. And the second thing is that you can actually use the content of the case study interviews that you've done to feed into other things that you're writing. So if you're interviewing a customer, you have a transcript of the interview that you've done. You may end up in the case study itself only using two or three quotes from the customer, but they've said a whole load of brilliant stuff. So if you've got the transcript, you can then use all of the rest of that, subject to the customer's permission, in other places. So you might want to put customer quotes into ebooks or into white papers, or you might even, if you've recorded the interview, be able to use that recorded interview as excerpts in a podcast.
I suppose you could even use it, not just podcasts, but also animated videos and webinars, because obviously it's you might not have the visual there, but you've certainly got the audio, so you'd be wanting to apply it to something that you don't need to worry about having a person's face straight in front of you.
Yes, and I think there are lots of different ways that you can repurpose a single case study interview. I mean, it all in the end comes down to getting the customer's permission. So that's one of the challenges that we have. But if you do have their permission to use that, then there are many, many different ways that you can use it.
Yeah, and make the most of it.
And make the most of it and extend its value, yes. Yeah.
OK, Okay, moving on to the second part of this month's podcast, we wanted to talk to you for a while about tips for interviewing clients and industry figures when you're creating content, when you're handling some copy. And obviously, this is not just exclusively for case studies. As we've mentioned, you could be interviewing someone for an ebook or a white paper or even a blog post. So just what can people do to make the most of an interview with either a client or one of their customers?
Yeah, so I mean, there are lots and lots of tips for interviews. Mm. So just going by my own experience, I think some of the important things that you can do are, first of all, have an idea in your head of the story that you are hoping to get out of the interview. It may not be the actual story you end up with, but it always helps to have as much background as you can into the person you're interviewing and why you're interviewing them and the story that you're hoping to get out of it. So first of all, do your research and get some background and have a general idea of what you want. In terms of writing up questions before the interview, I would say just have a set of guide questions to steer the conversation rather than trying to plan out every single question in advance. And the advantage with that is if you find the interview is going wrong or strayed massively off topic, you've always got something to bring it back to. So just 5 or 6 questions to kind of structure the interview. And also to make sure that you get all your questions asked during the time that you've got, because it is quite easy to get off topic. But that being said, I find a lot of the most interesting stuff comes when you don't stick to the guide questions, when you sort of follow your nose, or the person has said something really interesting that you think would make actually a different story but a more interesting one. So it's kind of let your curiosity guide you and follow your nose as well, rather than sticking to this rigid list of questions that you've got. I've got more.
Okay.
So I think another very important thing is to be able to put what your interviewee is telling you into context. So it's very important to ask the question why. Not just what did you do, but why did you do that? Why was it important? What other options did you have? Why did you choose this one? So the more context you can get, the more of a story you can make it. Basically, we were talking earlier about making this an engaging story and putting it into a relatable context for your audience. By asking those questions about why, it opens up the wider story around what's actually happened or what you're interviewing them about. And one of the most useful things that I find, and this is always at the end of the interview, but make sure you leave time for this, is when you finish asking all of your questions, you would say to the person that you're interviewing, is there anything else that you'd like to add that we haven't talked about? And that, I find, is where the most interesting stuff comes out. So you may think that you've got the story that you wanted, but they've got plenty more things that they wanted to say. So give them time, you know, leave time, 5-10 minutes for that at the end, and you'll find that that's where the most interesting stuff comes out.
Would you perhaps have any advice for dealing with people that do not necessarily have English as a first language? Because it can be perhaps, I don't want to say painful, but at the same time, it can slow down progress when you've only got a short period of time to sort of interview. Does it help perhaps sending them a sort of at least a vague outline of the kind of things you're going to be asking, so they can have a think about what they're going to be answering before the call or interview in person?
I think yes, absolutely, definitely. If you know you're going to be talking to somebody who doesn't have English as a first language and you don't speak their language, definitely sending them the questions that you want to go over in advance is really important, and sending them far enough in advance that they've had time to think about them as well. And then just on the call, I mean, if it's, you can do all the things that, you know, speaking very slowly, you're repeating yourself, trying to rephrase it in different ways. But if it's really not working out, not every interview works out. Mm. So you can't assume that you're going to get an absolutely brilliant story from everybody you talk to. So I think it's recognising whether the interview's salvageable. And if it is, then doing what you can to salvage it. But if it's not salvageable, then just get to the end of your questions and maybe go back to your client and say, well, we didn't get everything that we wanted from that person. Is there anybody else that we can speak to within that organisation? And if there is somebody else you can speak to, great, maybe you'll get the information that you were missing. If not, then maybe you can't do anything with that one. So you're not always going to get a brilliant story, basically.
What would you say are the benefits of sort of an in-person interview versus a call-based interview? I mean, obviously we do a lot of call-based interviews, But do you feel that perhaps we're sometimes missing out by not being able to talk to people face to face? Or
yes, we do lots of call-based interviews because we deal with clients all around the world. We're talking to people all around the world. It's not practical to get to their location and talk to them in person. But I think if you can get to their location and talk to them in person, then you definitely should, because you just get so much more rapport and value from meeting the person face to face and actually being in the room with them. And you find that people are prepared to dedicate more time, I think, as well, if somebody's actually coming to interview them, rather than just, you know, a quick call on the phone. So if you can do it in person, I would, yeah.
However, while we are talking about having calls or obviously talking to people in person, one might naturally conclude, or you could do video calls if you can't see people in person. But from my experience of seeing people trying to talk intelligently to each other via something like Google Hangouts, I can't imagine that necessarily being the best thing to do either, because you've got to obviously you're presenting yourself in an unflattering angle because of a webcam. So I would say that personally, if I was going to advise somebody on trying to find some leeway between interviewing in person and doing a call, maybe do not resort to a video call, because people could still be very nervous about that.
I don't think that video calling or video conferencing has yet it's yet to reach a level of sophistication where it's actually like you're in the room with that person. It may well do in the next few years, and it may well become much more of a natural format than it is today.
I'm now imagining virtual presence robots.
Yes,
for an
interviewing
interview.
Each other.
That would be great. Sort of met in a corner cafe, empty cups, and two sort of virtual presence sort of robots standing there, people looking around, going, "What the heck's going on?" And there's just this conversation going on as they talk over the cafe's Wi-Fi.
That would be fantastic. That's the future of B2B interviewing. Yeah,
there will be no contact at all except through robots. Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for on this episode of the Radix Copycast. You can find Fiona on Twitter via RadixFiona. You can find Radix there on radix.com. And please go and visit our new website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for our monthly e-newsletter for the latest copywriting tips and insights. And you can also find the episode on iTunes. Goodbye.
Goodbye.